Hello and welcome to this very special episode of the Picture House podcast. And today I am joined by director Michael Cumming, who, listeners, you can't appreciate this, but is in an amazing looking recording booth with a lot of musical instruments in the background.
Failed pop star and director. Nice to see you, Sam.
Yeah, lovely to talk. I guess like a lot of people, when I was looking through your IMDb page, you know, because I'm very professional, you've been behind so many of my favourite TV shows and comedy specials and everything in between. I mean, your credits are incredible.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. It's nice to have some incredible credits.
Listeners might be thinking, why are you talking to someone who's involved in television on the Picture House Cinemas podcast? Well, Michael's also got some film credits to his name, and one of those in particular, Oxide Ghosts, The Brass Eye Tapes, is on tour around the country in February and March, and maybe one or two in April, I think that's about right, Michael?
Yes, mainly March, but one in April and a couple in February, yeah.
And this is, I guess I should let you explain what this is. People, your first, I think, television credit is directing the, you know, seminal comedy series Brass Eye. And yeah, this is a bit of a reflection on that series.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't my first television directing credit. It was the first comedy that I ever did. I went to art college and film school. And then I'd sort of, by accident, really, I don't know how it happened, I'd end up becoming a sort of jobbing director, really, doing all kinds of not very satisfying stuff on TV, and, you know, keeping my sanity by making sort of Arts Council funded short films and things, but really doing not the sort of thing that I was particularly interested in. And then, you know, one fateful day I met Chris Morris, and I don't think I've ever really been asked to do anything but comedy ever since that day, which was about 27 years ago. So it's interesting, isn't it, how just one little thing can change the course of what you end up doing. I was always keen on comedy, and I was always a fan of comedy, and especially the more unusual stuff, you know, growing up with Monty Python and Vic and Bob and stuff like that. But I never really thought about that would be a thing that I would do until, you know, I ended up directing the Brass Eye series. Yeah.
How did you meet Chris Morris? It sounds like an event in its own right.
Well, I do go into it a little bit in the film, but I suppose the reason why I got to meet him for Brass Eye was I'd previously worked on a TV series called The Word, which was a sort of late night Channel 4. I don't know. How would you describe it? Do you know it, Sam? You're probably better at describing things. No. It was a sort of late night youth TV, fairly appalling. It was probably before you were even born. You certainly shouldn't have been watching it. And I used to go and direct sort of films in America for the show and take one of the presenters. We used to drive around and do sort of look at those crazy American kind of films. And it was, you know, pretty hateful. It was the sort of, in the way for me, the last nail in my sort of television coffin. I by the end of that, I thought, really, this isn't for me. I don't want to be making, you know, I want to go back and make artistic films and have nobody watch them. And that would be better than doing this sort of stuff. But because the editor of that program, the series editor, was then asked to produce the pilot of what was to become Brass Eye. At the time, it was a Chris Morris pilot, unknown what it would be. I was one of the directors he invited to meet Chris, so, you know, we met, we seemed to hit it off, and that's how it started.
Oh, wow. And then everything else unraveled from there on.
And then a sort of, you know, 25 years later, I'm still, you know, this same month, 25 years later, I've got Toast of Tinseltown with Matt Berry airing on BBC Two. So it's quite nice that, you know, still doing that sort of slightly unusual comedy all these years later. But yeah, it all stemmed from that, really. And of course, I do other bits and pieces of stuff. I make my own films. I recently made a documentary for the first time. But essentially, it's been comedy based for all that time. Yeah.
Wow. Yes. I think. At the time of recording, you just mentioned Toast of Tinseltown. That's currently airing, or has aired now, by the time listeners are hearing this, on the BBC. I love Toast of London, and I was so pleased when the character was back, when Matt Berry was back, when you came back for Toast of Tinseltown. what struck me with Total Tinsdown is, I mean, especially like episode one, you got cameos of people like Larry David, and like the cast is pretty huge. How did Total Tinsdown come about?
Well, we'd been talking. I mean, we did three seasons on Channel 4. The last one ended it, I think, in like 2015 or something. And since then, we've talked a lot about, you know, we wanted to do more. I don't think the channel, you know, there seems to be a sense now that if you're doing something slightly unusual, you get two or three goes at it. And then after that, they get the next lot in and they get the weird comedy franchise. There doesn't seem to be room for more than one, or they didn't then. And so I guess we had our thing for 3-4 years. And so we did talk about what else we could do with it. And Matt was always, you know, amazingly, yeah, he was very keen on the character, and he was always sort of adamant, oh, we'll do something else one day, we'll do something else. We talked about doing a film, and there was talk at one point about it transferring to the States as an American show. And they all got quite close to happening, but didn't quite happen. And I must say, by the time Tinseltown came along, I thought probably it had gone, you know, it wouldn't come back. But again, Matt kept saying, oh, you know, I really want to do more of this. And Arthur Matthews, who co-writes it with Matt, who wrote Father Ted and amongst other many great things, was all, you know, we were all very keen to try it again. And, you know, just putting this sort of Tinseltown twist on it, I suppose, gave it a new lease of life and opened up a whole new world. But I suppose I hadn't realized it had become, because it ended up on Netflix, as things do, it had got a, you know, quite a big fan base in the States and in other territories that I guess it wouldn't have done had it just been sitting on Channel 4. So actually, it turns out that a lot of people were keen on the show, and people like Larry David came on board because they were fans of the show and they wanted to do it, you know, which is amazing.
Wow. What's it like directing Larry David?
Well, it was done remotely, but it was great fun, actually. He was totally brilliant and totally up for trying, you know, trying things out, and went to a lot of effort to sort of get what we wanted and do what we wanted. And his main stipulation was he'd do it if he could say, yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. That's what he wanted. He said, I'll do it if I can say that. And of course we went, yeah, of course. And I think he says it maybe twice, actually, in the series. We made sure he got a good couple of cracks at it. So even, you know, that still translates over there.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I was, I think Curb, the latest season of Curb had just finished when Total Tinseltown was starting. So, yeah, it was really surprising to see that in the, right at the front of the series.
It's nice that it's had that spread. You know, it's nice that it, you know, because of the Netflix and stuff, it has had that, spread. And this series was co-funded, it was BBC and co-funded by an American company. So obviously the hope is that they will then sell it to a platform in the States. We're not sure. It might be Netflix again. It might be something else. But you know, hopefully it'll spread the word.
Oh, wow, that's really great to hear. I can tell you that Toast is often quoted around the Picture House office.
Is it?
some big Matt Berry fans, big comedy fans in the office. I think we sort of bonded over that, and I think that's probably maybe. Things like Brass Eye, I remember I was at school when Brass Eye came out, but you know, people were quoting it in the playground, and you know, everyone was watching it on telly when they shouldn't have been.
They shouldn't have been.
Far too late.
Far too late. It's all these liberal parents I blame. People like you.
But I guess I think that's why, you know, the show still has this legacy, you know, 27 years on now, as you say, like, because it had so many memorable moments and it lived in the popular conscious for such a long time. It must be something that you, before Oxide Ghosts came out even, you'd get asked about, you know, on a regular basis, I imagine.
Yeah, it was, and it was something I'd not really talked about much. I know, you know, at the time we were making it, there was certainly this thing that we didn't talk about it, and Chris and I never really spoke much about it. Certainly, when it was being made, we couldn't, because it was a very secretive thing, and it had to sort of be quite under the radar. And then it just sort of carried on, really. I sort of didn't talk about it much, partly because I just thought, well, that was it, the mystique is kind of cool anyway about it, but also I thought that maybe one day I'd do something somehow about it. So, you know, I started thinking about this at the 20th anniversary 5 years ago, and at that point I thought, okay, well, enough time's passed, you know, things can be said. But the film is deliberately, the way I narrate the film is deliberately, I guess, sort of ambiguous in some ways, because it's nice to just keep these ideas sort of floating around, but not necessarily go into huge details about the ins and outs of everything. You know, it's not, I mean, a lot of stuff is known now and people have written about it a lot, but there's still a lot of stuff that isn't known and that will never be known. And I think it's nice to have those secrets still sort of, you know, there somewhere, buried.
So for a listener, you know, listening, seeing that Oxide Ghosts is coming to their local picture house, how did the film come about? What's it made up of?
Well, it started like most things. It started accidentally. It wasn't intended to be an anything really. At the 20th anniversary of Brass Eye, I was asked to if I'd talk about it at a TV festival in Manchester, Pilot Light Festival, and I said yes I would, and then I sort of mentioned to the organisers that I had this box of tapes and that maybe I'll have a look through, see if I can, because I hadn't looked at it for 20 years literally, because they were on VHS tapes, and you know, I said I'll have a look through if I can, and if I can find a little clip that nobody's seen before, maybe we'll play that at the event, and that would be quite fun for fans who've come. You know, if they're going to sit in a cinema and watch every episode back to back of the series, you know, maybe one little extra nugget at the end would be good. So really, the film came about as an offshoot of just, I got the tapes digitized and I sat in an edit suite with them and I just started to pull clips that I thought were funny, versions of things that had maybe been seen in a different way, or things that had been cut that had never been seen, little behind-the-scenes moments. And I just started to pull them onto a timeline, thinking, oh, I'll pick the best one and I'll show that. But by the end, I had so much material that I thought, I wonder if there is a thing that there could be some sort of thing. And I wasn't really interested. I mean, I've got no interest in making a documentary about Brass Eye. That would be sort of weird because we'd be sort of part of that. But I thought maybe a sort of personal memoir about it that used this material and gave people a chance to see some of the stuff that they hadn't seen, in the way that I'm excited when, you know, if an album I really love releases some of the sort of alternative versions or outtakes or things, you know, I'm sort of interested to hear it. So I thought maybe there would be, you know, and because it was conceived just for this audience of Brass Eye fans who are coming to watch this thing, I thought, well, it doesn't matter how sort of deep you go into it, because they'll be interested in seeing those things. So that's what I did. And I also thought, I can't, you know, I could never show this if Chris Morris didn't want me to, because it's his show, you know. So I made sure Chris saw it, and we met up, and I thought he'd probably say, no, don't show that. Or he might say, well, yeah, okay, but not that bit, and cut that bit. But he was brilliantly supportive, actually, and he said, you know, just, yeah, I like it, you know, do it. So I did it, and it was supposed to be just that one-off showing, and you know, things sort of spiraled very quickly. I think in the audience of that one-off showing was a couple of programmers from a couple of cinemas who got in touch with me pretty much immediately saying, well, can we show it? And then from that, a few more. I think programmers, you probably know better than me, they all keep an eye on what everybody else is doing and what they've got on. And it wasn't many weeks later before a lot of programmers had said, oh, will you come and show it here, will you come and show it there? So that was the sort of haphazard sort of route that I ended up touring it originally for the 20th. And I've sort of kept to that now. It's basically, if you ask me, all right, I probably will show it. So it's maybe not the best sort of economical way of doing it, but that's, so when I was doing it this time, I just decided that, you know, cinemas who'd shown it, a lot of people had asked me to show it again, and even though I showed it a lot in 2017 and 18, lots of people over the years have said, I can't believe I missed it, I'm so annoyed and I'll never get to see it again, and da da da. And so there were requests to show it again, so you know, if people were interested, I sort of said, okay, let's do it again. And one of those people was Picture House, so that's
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how the film programming team works. Like, oh, what are they doing? Oh, yeah, let's get a bit of that, and vice versa. get a lot of messages from people going, oh, I've seen you're showing this film. How did you, who do you contact for the rights? All that sort of stuff.
Well, that was nice of you. You got in touch with me the other day about my other film, which was, which you know, then that's interesting. A few people have, you know, want to show that now, which is great.
Well, that's fantastic. I think, you know, Brass Eye has got this legendary sort of status in terms of the British comedy scene. And it's, you know, like I say, there isn't lots out there about the making of it. And it's sort of like rare beast, which is quite nice. It adds to the feel of the show, and Oxide Ghosts has that too. This isn't available on streaming or on TV. You can't buy a DVD of this. You're very sort of, you know, you're taking this film around, and it's these one night only events. I think that's quite special in a day where there is so much on demand television and content.
Absolutely. And that was when I did talk to Chris about it. We talked about how, you know, because I've had this stuff for years and we've known it was around, but I didn't really just want to put it up online, and so we talked about how to make it special, you know, and that we thought that was maybe the way to do it, to make it that. And also, you know, I tend to do it. I've done it. I did it 5 years ago. I've done it this year. It's a sort of an anniversary, and it's an opportunity for fans of the show to get together and sort of laugh together in a room, which was the other sort of thing that I found with it, which I hadn't thought of, because obviously when it went out on television, as television programs do, you know, sometimes if you're lucky, people go, oh, I like that, and great, but you never get to sit in a room full of people all laughing out loud at stuff, or sometimes sort of gasping with shock at things, you know. It's great to have that sort of communal viewing experience of something that was, I suppose, originally designed to be shown on a rectangular box in somebody's living room. And it was that then, you know, people didn't watch consume their TV on the internet then. It was just a box. But I think the communal viewing thing is good. And like-minded people get to sort of meet other like-minded people in a room. And, you know, that's always good, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, your comedy is designed, I think, to be enjoyed as a crowd, you know, the history of stand-up comedy and everything. And it is a shame when, you know, an amazing comic gets, you know, it's a great TV deal, but it takes them out of action for a couple of years doing that, and then people watch it individually. I think it's such a rare treat to see, especially, you know, television comedy in a big room together. Oxide Ghost feels like a must-see appointment.
Well, the funny thing was when I didn't last time I showed it, I did a few because I've been working with Stuart Lee a lot, and Stuart did a few of my Q&As, and he's doing one this time. But he saw it for the first time in a cinema with people, and he was saying, "Oh, it's so great! It reminded me of when I went to the cinema to watch Airplane, and all the audience were laughing out loud a lot in it." And you know, he was saying that's really good to, you know, obviously he's a man who stands on stage and lives or dies by people laughing out loud. So he's probably more in tune to the idea of where laughs come. But, you know, he said to sit in a cinema and hear the laughter coming, you know, loud in a room, you know, from a film is a special thing.
And nobody, I mean, if you think about, you know, the history of Brass Eye, people may know the episodes inside and out, but they won't have watched this footage or, you know, versions of this footage with an audience before. It sort of adds an extra factor to enjoying Brass Eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, even the biggest fans won't have seen everything in it, whatever. But yes, to see it with other people, and also, you know, who knows who you might meet. It's like a public service I'm offering here, you know.
What was it like last time you took it on tour and talking to the fans?
Well, it was different then, obviously, because the world's slightly different, but it was great. It was, I suppose the thing is, it's nice to think that in, you know, what can be a very throwaway medium, I suppose, television, especially now when television isn't maybe valued in the same way that it was when Brass Eye came about, when that was, you know, pre-social media, pre-YouTube, pre-internet, really. You know, television had a slightly more important role, perhaps, in people's lives. It's just nice to think that something you made all those years ago still kind of resonates with people. And people who weren't around at the time or even born at the time, some of them only remember it vaguely from being very young, are still sort of finding it and enjoying it all these years later. You know, it's really lovely to have that.
I don't know who's pre-booked tickets for the tour, but I bet you'll get a lot of people who saw it last time and now they're bringing new friends along. You know, oh, you've got to go and see this.
Well, people have been to see it numerous times because there's a lot in it. It's quite dense, it's quite fast, and obviously because I've made it clear that this is the way that it's going to be presented, it is, you know, it's you know, I think people do come and see it more than once for sure.
And I guess you get the added value, you know, like you're literally taking this around. It's it was mentioned earlier, it's quite a thorough tour. You're going to meet audiences from all around the country here. And I think people like, you know, the opportunity to ask the director, you know, lots of questions. So it's, you know, you get it's the film as well as, you know, the Q&A and you introduce the film as well. And it's sort of like it's a full meal of a night out, you know.
It's a full, yeah. There's a little starter. There's a short little film before the film, and then I talk for a little bit about it. Then we see the film, and then there's a Q&A. And even the Q&A, you know, that can be wildly different depending on, well, I suppose, depending on who the host is and depending on what the audience want to ask. It can go, you know, it can go off anywhere. Or if people don't have any questions, great, whatever. Although I've never had a problem with people having questions, because this isn't a film that you accidentally wander into thinking, oh, I'll go and see this tonight. People who come to see it know the show and probably know it better than me, actually. My main job is to make sure I look like I know a bit more than the real fans do, which I think I do, but, you know, it's hard to remember everything.
Well, that's the thing. I've been in you know, various Q&As where I've been hosting or whatever, and the audience too sometimes know more than the people on stage, because of course for them it was a long time ago, and for the audience they've literally just seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned earlier, you know, you've got a couple of other film credits. I was lucky enough to see your, I guess, most recent film, King Rocker, and I had loved that film. I thought it was really wonderful. I was just wondering if in future you've got more sort of film projects up your sleeve.
Well, King Rocker took us by surprise a little bit. We made it, I suppose, thinking that it would have a limited sort of cinema run. It's a documentary, I guess. Well, it is a documentary, although it does play with the form of documentaries, I suppose. But it's a documentary fronted by the comedian Stuart Lee about a band called the Nightingales, a band which aren't well known and which we wanted to make a film that, if you'd never heard of them or had no interest in their music, you still might want to see the film. So that was how we started with that. And it was intended to do, like, we did it after I'd done Oxide Ghost and realised that you could make an entirely independent film and get it into cinemas and get it to an audience. But because it was finished just before lockdown, obviously the plans for that were, like so many other people's, scuppered. So we ended up showing it on Sky Arts, which had just gone free to air, and we thought that was a good opportunity for people to get to see it, not really knowing whether we'd get it into cinemas or not. And we have now managed to get it into some cinemas, and we will continue to do that. But Stuart and I really enjoyed the process of doing that, and we have got another film planned that we're hoping to start later in the year. It's a tricky one, because the reason why Oxide Ghost, I think, if people like it, the reason why they like it, I think, might be down to the fact that it was very independent. It was literally Stuart and myself and the producer, James Nichols, who really runs a record company. And so it didn't have any backers or finance or executives or notes, or it was just what we wanted to do, how we wanted to do it. I edited it all myself because we couldn't afford an editor. So it literally was exactly as I wanted. It wasn't even an editor saying, oh, try that. It was just like, no, this is how it is. And that was a very, although it's you know, it's a time consuming and process, it's very satisfying in the end to do that. So it's just, I think if we do something else, it's just getting that balance right of having the freedom to make it what you want it to be. But also, you know, you can only do so many sort of passion projects before you have to not do them. So we're just trying to work out what the best way of balancing it is. And certainly any money we made from any screenings of King Rocker are going to go back into sort of making the next one. But yeah, we definitely want to do that, and the hope would be that would be as we intended this one to be, which would be more made for a cinema audience, and then if TV want to buy it later, great, you know, rather than this one had to be the other way around just because of the way the world was at the time.
I do recommend people, listeners, check out King Rocker. I don't know the Nightingales at all, but I was intrigued because of your involvement and Stuart's involvement. And it's such a great portrait, you know, of this really creative individual who's had so many branches on his career and journey, and obviously made with lots of affection and love. And, you know, if you're a fan of Stuart Lee's sort of tone of voice, you know, that definitely comes through in the form as well.
It's, yeah.
They've got such good chemistry together. But yeah, lovely, lovely film.
Yeah, and that's coming out on DVD in March. So if you can't see it on, I think it might be still streamable on Sky Arts, but it's coming out on DVD again in a sort of Oxide Ghost way with more extras than the actual length of the film. I was going to cut a different version of the film. There's like 100 minutes of extras, and at one point I strung them all together and Stuart said, "That's brilliant. It's like an Oxide Ghost version of the film. It's like you could just put that out as another version of the film." But so there's you know, even if you've seen the film, there's probably plenty on there you might enjoy.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that, the DVD. I'm going to check that out and make sure I buy a copy.
I think it's available to pre-order now, actually, but it's not actually out in the physical shops till March. And we hope to show it, and we've got some festivals lined up for it, and you know, other screenings as and when we can fit them in. But it's nice to, you know, as with this, it's nice to not just put it into a cinema. It's nice to go with Stuart and myself and talk about it and answer questions on it, because I think people are, you know, maybe interested on how, you know, in how a film gets like that gets made. So we try and do it, you know, do sort of in-person kind of appearances when we do show it.
I think it makes it more memorable, and people have a deeper attachment to the thing. You know, it's not like you come and go and there's no human interaction. You know, people remember that, you know, I went to a Q&A, or they said this during the Q&A, and it's something that only that audience get to experience, which that's why we love hosting them at Pitch House. You know, it sort of adds a live element to what can be quite a, you know, alien, distant sort of medium film in some respects. So yeah, we always build our cinemas with stages, and we always invite people for Q&As where we can.
With fine audio equipment.
Top of the range audio equipment. The comfy seats in the house, yeah. The freshest popcorn. But it's a rare treat, so I do enjoy that. So talking about Stuart Lee, I know he's actually hosting one of the Q&As at Oxide Ghost as well, Crouch End Picture House, which at the time of recording is sold out, but we've noticed it's in not the biggest screen, so we might bump it up and release a few more tickets.
That would be good, yes. I mean, he's a draw, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, last time I had a few nice guests who came and did it just because either they were fans of the film, or sometimes just because they wanted to see the film and they were coming anyway. So I said, oh, do you want to do the Q&A? David Walliams, the National Treasure from... author, raconteur, comedian, is hosting the one at the Notting Hill Gate. He's a huge fan of the film. I've worked with David over the years, and I was working with him recently, and we got talking about the film. He didn't know anything about it, and he said, I've got to see this film. You've got to tell me the next time it's on. So I told him, and then, you know, we got talking about it. So he's going to come along and ask the questions. And he is a real fan, actually, and he will, you know, ask questions just like any other. What's it like? How do you do that? You know, so that'll be interesting to get his take on it as well. And you know, there's other people. Arthur Matthews is doing one in Dublin, and you know, various other people. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, I think it's I guess that's the, you know, the excitement. Who might be hosting your Q&A with Oxide Ghosts?
if you're a well-known fan of Brass Eye and you're listening to this and want to host a an event.
That's
just
great.
Get in touch with Sam.
Currently seeking hosts in the following. So yeah. Having someone like David Walliams and Stuart Lee hosting a Q&A, that's going to be incredibly exciting. I'm going to try and get down to those myself and see what happens.
But also the people who host it generally, that's, you know, that's sort of not, that's doing a disservice. Or I don't know what who's lined up this time, but last time all the people who hosted it, I think, you know, you managed to, and on all the cinemas, managed to find people who were very keen on the show, enthusiastic about it. I don't think there was anyone where it was just somebody doing it as a job. You know, they were all really into it and had great questions. And anyway, the audience have always got great questions, so, you know, there's always that to fall back on. But yeah.
Absolutely. I think, if you're a Brass Eye fan or you remember the show, I highly recommend checking this out. It was so much fun to watch this, and I can't wait to see it. Followed by a Q&A and all of that sort of stuff when it's at Picture House Cinemas in February. So yeah, thanks so much for your time today, Michael. It's been so nice to chat. And thank you for re-releasing Oxide Ghosts and giving people another chance to see it back on the big screen.
Great, thank you. And see you in March.
Cool. So listeners, all of the dates are in the show notes. If you click on the link there, find your nearest cinema or Picture House cinema, and make sure you come to the Q&A with some questions for Michael. He'll be around after to answer everything you might want to ask about Brass Eye. Okay, I think that's a wrap. That was great. Thanks so much, Michael.